following is a paid program. The opinions contained within do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or sponsors of News Talk Radio WOBM AM 1160 and 1310.
Inside the Law is presented to educate listeners in Monmouth and Ocean counties about legal issues. The opinions expressed by the host, guests, and phone callers are strictly their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Town Square Media and are not intended to be a substitute for personal legal advice from your own attorney.
Your questions and comments are welcome at 732-505-1160. Inside the Law, talk radio for the Jersey Shore.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Inside the Law. I'm your host, Bob Novy, of the law firm of Novy & Associates. I want to welcome all of our listeners here in Ocean and Monmouth County and the rest of the world listening on the Internet at www.wobmam.com. Our law firm is a boutique elder law firm that specializes in an ever-growing area of law known as elder law, which includes assisting clients with asset protection, Medicaid planning, guardianships, planning their estates, which sometimes includes discussions about preparation of wills, trust agreements, financial powers of attorney, medical powers of attorney, living wills. We also assist clients with settling their estates. We sometimes go to court on guardianship matters and litigating estates, as well as helping folks with the purchase and sale of their real estate. Every week, we literally take you, the listener, inside the law to discuss a topic of interest. And we also invite you, if you have questions about today's show, you may have a question about the subject matter of today's show or any other legal issue, you're welcome to call us at the studio at 732-505-1160. Our sound engineer, Lauren, is waiting for your calls. And today, please welcome two friends and colleagues who assist us with our clients in an area of law that we regularly deal with, which is the end stages of life. And we're going to talk today with Adam Romano, who's the Director of Marketing with Embracing Hospice, and Susan Froelich, who's a nurse, RN and BSN in nursing, who's the Director of Nursing with Embracing Hospice. And we're going to talk today with both folks on hospice care, what are the criteria, the structure of hospice care, what services it may include, and the family's role in hospice care for a loved one. Good morning, Adam. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, what is your role and how did you get into hospice with Embracing?
I'm the director of marketing, and I've been in the hospice industry for 3 years now. But previous to that, I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. I worked with the product Aricept, which is the Alzheimer's medication, and it was kind of a transition to come into hospice from there.
And Susan, you've been a nurse for a number of years.
Yes, I've been a nurse for almost 30 years, 20 in a hospital, and then I left to work for hospice. It'll be 10 years in this November.
Can you explain to me, either one of you, what is hospice and how does it come about in a medical care setting and situation?
I'll answer that. Hospice okay. is a plan of care for patients with a life-limiting illness. It's actually patient and family-directed plan of care, but it's coordinated by a physician and a nurse such as Sue. And then it's provided by an interdisciplinary team of professionals, healthcare professionals, and volunteers. The focus on hospice is palliative, not curative. It's all about comfort, relief of symptoms, and maintaining dignity and quality of life.
What I've seen in my professional career as an attorney who specializes in elder law and elder care planning, working with families and friends and the medical community and the home health agency community, is from my experience as an attorney, clients will typically go to the hospital for care and treatment, dealing with their doctors and the whole array of services that they receive. And as we all know, people in this country are certainly living much longer than they have in the past. Between advances in medical science and drugs and other therapies, people are living longer. And yet, there comes a time when the medical system, the health system, can't, as you mentioned the word curative, can't reverse or cure that particular illness. And the patient may be more hospice appropriate. Who typically will initiate that conversation with the patient to explore hospice care, palliative care, as opposed to curative care?
It can come from the physician, it can come from a family member, it can come from a social worker, or the patient himself will say, enough is enough, I want to go home, I don't want any more treatment. And then they contact the hospice, and it goes from there.
Before we continue, I want to remind our listeners that you should always have, and if you don't, please get one, a pen, pad, handy, because we will be giving out important information, website addresses, phone numbers, which I think our listeners here today and Inside the Law will want to take advantage of. So let's say the patient has reached the point where they know they're not getting any better, and perhaps they've discussed that with the physician, or the physician has had that conversation with the family member who's acting as the patient, I call them the client's best interest, as their advocate, as their spokesperson. So it's clearly indicated that the patient isn't going to recover from that illness. Can the patient or their family member request of the doctor that they be put on hospice if the doctor hasn't suggested it?
They can. If they've spoken with family members, they've done some research, understand what their options are, then definitely the request can come from the family. And talk to the physician and suggest to write an order for evaluation to treatment hospice.
So if the doctor cooperates and writes that order saying that the patient is hospice appropriate, what happens from that point on?
Okay, typically from there would begin with a call out to our office for the, like you were saying, the evaluation of hospice. We would request then the physician's order, and from there we would set up an appointment with the patient or their family member to consult, answer questions, kind of a one-on-one as far as what the options are. And then at that point, if they want to go forward with, they sign a consent form to elect hospice, and then one of our nurses would then come out to do their admission, and the visits would actually start from there.
Now, as I understand it, a person who is appropriate and is agreed to be placed on hospice, they can receive the many hospice services, which we're going to describe for our listeners in a moment, but they can receive hospice care either in their own home setting.
Correct.
They can receive it if they're still a patient in a hospital setting.
Right.
Or they can receive it if they're, let's say, living in an assisted living facility or a nursing home.
Correct.
Or even some kind of a continuing care community.
I think one of the common misconceptions of hospice is that it's a place, and it's actually a service that goes anywhere that the patient lives, whether it is their primary residence. Matter of fact, probably about 85% of the patients that we care for live at home in an environment that's safe and familiar and comfortable, surrounded by their loved ones. But we also go, as you pointed out, with nursing homes. We partner with many in the area, assisted living. And, of course, he had said the hospital as well.
I just want to remind our listeners again, you're listening to 1160 WOBM AM here in Ocean County and 1310 AM in Monmouth County. And our phone number here at the studio is 732-505-1160. I'm your host, Bob Novy, of the law firm of Novy & Associates. And if anyone has any questions, we welcome your calls. And sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, people are reluctant to call on the air for whatever reason. But if you have follow-up questions after today's show, you can certainly call me, Bob Novy, or one of our other attorneys, Doug Hull or Jason Wyatt, or our director of marketing, Jake Mason. Our phone number at Novy & Associates is 732-657-0600. And we're going to be giving this next number out many times during today's show. But if you'd like to learn more about embracing hospice and the multitude of information that is available through hospice care, wherever the patient may be, Embracing Hospice's phone number is 732-974-2545. By the way, how long has Embracing Hospice been providing these services?
I want to say they've been in originally in Georgia, and then they moved up here and opened a hospice up. I want to say over I've been there 10 years, so I think about 15 years they've been in service up here.
And probably even longer. The service areas that Embracing Hospice covers, in for our listeners to know?
We cover anywhere from Somerset County, from the north, all the way down to southern Ocean County, where a locally family-owned and operated company, so we just handle central New Jersey.
Because I know we've had clients that have received your services in Somerset County, Mercer County, Middlesex, I guess northern Burlington, and, of course, Ocean and Monmouth counties as well. And let's talk about the levels of care that are available through hospice.
I earlier mentioned the interdisciplinary team. That's going to consist of the nurse case manager who directs the team, as I pointed out before, and he or she's visits are typically minimum about once a week. Then the certified nurse assistant or home health aide typically visits daily to help with the activities of daily living,
which would be, among others, toileting, transfers from bed to toilet or kitchen, feeding, dressing, socialization, whatever activities the patient is able to perform or desires to participate in, things like that.
That's correct.
Some light cleaning, some cooking.
They'll make meals
for the patient.
Okay.
And they're usually with the patients for about an hour to 2 hours a day, depending on need. And, of course, our social worker, chaplain, and volunteers visit intermittently as needed or requested. That's considered our routine home care. It's about 90 to 95% of all the care that we provide. There's actually four levels of hospice care. That next level is going to be what's called respite care. And that is for our home patient to take advantage of up to a five-day stay at one of our contracted long-term care facilities.
So, for example, let's say we have a husband and wife, and the husband goes on hospice. He's receiving hospice care, and the wife would like to attend a granddaughter's wedding or grandson's college graduation, but she's afraid of leaving her husband alone, and he can't attend the function because of his illness and whatever limitations he may have. If there's not the resources to provide 24-hour live-in care for the husband at home, respite care would allow the husband to be in a facility, let's say assisted living or even nursing home, for up to 5 days. And so the wife can attend the family function, or the wife might just get a break and have 5 days off for herself, for her own healing, while the husband's well looked after.
Right. That's what it's used for, correct.
That's a wonderful resource.
And it's paid for all by hospice.
Okay.
So the next level up would be continuous home care. And as the name implies, it's more continuous. It's 24 hours until that the patient's symptoms come to a manageable level. It's used for short-term symptom management in a crisis-type situation. And then, of course, once the symptoms are under control, they would then come back down to that routine home care.
Okay.
And then the highest level, of course, would be the inpatient level, where it's also for short-term symptom management in a contracted facility.
Okay.
So I don't know if Sue had anything to add to that.
Or we do it at Raritan Bay. We have quite a few inpatient patients there. But, like, it's short-term. It's not long-term.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to 1160 WOBM AM in Ocean County and 1310 AM in Monmouth County, and our phone lines are open, and we're going to take our first caller. But if anyone else has a follow-up question, you can call us at 732-505-1160. Lauren, who's our first caller? Liz, thank you for tuning in to Inside the Law. Good morning. Liz?
Hello?
Yes, good morning. Welcome to Inside the Law. How can we help you?
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm listening to your show. A friend of mine a little while ago took a leave of absence and then moved in with her mother to take care of her as she was dying from cancer. And she just said hospice was wonderful, that she just could not have gone through that time period without their help. But my question is, who pays for hospice?
It's a very good question.
Excellent question. 100% of all costs for hospice are paid by Medicare and Medicaid. However, if the patient doesn't have Medicare or Medicaid, most private insurances have a benefit, a hospice benefit that they could take advantage of.
Right.
Yeah, I did want to ask my friend because she was still kind of broken up over the whole situation, but it sounded like she got a lot of help. And she said something that even after her mother passed away, that the hospice group was still reaching out to her to make sure she was okay.
Yeah, would you, Adam or Sue or both of you, talk with Liz and our listeners here on Inside the Law about some of the follow-up that Embracing Hospice, for example, routinely does provide and offer to the survivors, the family members of the hospice patient?
We do have a social worker and a chaplain and a priest, and they do bereavement classes, and they normally will keep in contact up to a year or longer with the family members. And just so you know, we do charity cases too, if there's no insurance.
And what's unusual and unique to Embracing Hospice, quite frankly, is they have a foundation that provides even more extensive services free of charge when the need arises. Could you give Liz some examples of that, Adam?
Absolutely. So as I'd mentioned, the hospice care piece, the visits and the equipment and the medications are all covered by hospice. But there are things that aren't covered by hospice, such as let's say we take care of a patient in a home that the heat isn't on or something like that. The Hospice Foundation for Life, we collect money to pay for such things so they can, our patients can be in a safe environment.
I know from firsthand experience, Embracing recently provided hospice care for one of my clients, frankly, in the comfort and dignity of her home. She just passed this past week. And when I was at the house with my client's nephew and the social worker and the nurse from Embracing, Tracy, your social worker, asked the nephew, is there any other family member that should come in and would like to come into town to complete with her sister, our client, before our client passed away? And he said, yes, I have an aunt who's a sister of our client who has to come in from Ohio. And Embracing asked the nephew, does her sister have the resources to come in, to fly in and stay with the sister, our client? And fortunately, the sister did have the resources, but Embracing shared with the family that if money was a problem, Embracing's foundation might be able to assist with transportation costs, which frankly I've never heard of before. So that's it's another unique characteristic that Embracing Hospice does offer.
So is this the kind of thing, if you have a family member that needs to go on hospice or somebody, would you call hospice directly, or do you have to do it through your doctor?
Good question, Liz.
You can definitely call our main number for information and speak with one of our field representatives, like I said, anywhere in central New Jersey. And at that point, either we as Embracing would reach out to your doctor, or you can have that conversation as well. But yeah, the first step really is to call and find out.
And again, Adam, the phone number for Liz or any other people listening to today's show?
Sure. It's 732-974-2545. And we're also online at embracinghospicecare.org.
And Liz, I'm an advocate of pre-arranging things. As an elder law attorney, I don't like to leave any stone unturned. And I always like to remind our listeners specifically of the importance of having your legal affairs, your financial affairs, your medical affairs covered. I always like to say it's better and more efficient to prevent the fire than having to put it out. So I'll remind everyone listening to today's show of the importance of having an updated will, to have a medical directive or living will, to have a financial power of attorney, to have a medical power of attorney. And frankly, if you have a family member or a loved one or even a friend or a neighbor who has multiple health issues and perhaps, you're not sure, but perhaps they may be, you know, near the end of their life, and there's more appropriate ways of saying it, I'm sure, but there's an issue in your mind or their minds as to whether or not they might be eventually hospice appropriate. Adam, is there any reason why the family member or even a friend like Liz couldn't call Embracing and find out the information so that as a service, as a volunteer to help the family, make sure that their affairs are in order?
We actually do this all the time. A lot of the families reach out to us, and maybe they're not comfortable having that conversation with their physician, but we do. That's part of what our representatives do in the field, is go have relationships with physicians, and so that we can educate them on hospice as well. But what we can do in that situation would then say Liz told us who the doctor was, then we could go speak with them, and with her permission, of course, get look at the health records and physicals and labs, which, you know, Sue would look at. And then we would then ask if the patient was appropriate at that point, then to ask for an order further from the physician.
And Liz, I recommend it because, you know, in all due respect, two things in life are certain, death and taxes. From a legal point of view, I always say the difference is at least death doesn't get worse every time Congress meets. Taxes usually do. And as people age in place, and as we started out the show reminding our listeners that people are living longer, it's very comforting. Once these issues are discussed and they're written down and there's a plan in place, something as simple as not only having the right legal documents prepared, but even having a prearranged funeral written down. And some people may prepay that funeral in advance to take that financial burden off of the family later on. I always describe these steps as a way of, frankly, living with dignity and ultimately dying with dignity as well. And it's a tremendous service that anyone listening to today's show can do for themselves and their loved ones to take the burdens, financial, emotional, psychological, and otherwise, off of the people that are going to survive them by having their affairs arranged in a timely fashion. It's so much easier, and frankly, we're going to talk with Adam and Susan about some of the other ways that people can pre-register, they can record their wishes, and as you know, as that movie Bucket List described, different things that people can do and accomplish in their lives, regardless of how much time or how little time they have left. Whatever your wishes are, let's get them done, and let's make sure that your goals, your desires, your objectives are written down so, frankly, you have a sense of completion, and that alone can relieve a lot of stress for the patient and for the family that's going to survive as well.
I'll let you get back to your radio show, but I just really, really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing a show on hospice, because there's so much mystery about hospice. I think people are afraid to talk about it, and I'm afraid that a lot of people aren't using the services because they're afraid it's going to cost them money.
That's true.
Thank you so much for doing this radio show.
You're welcome. And again, Liz, and if I may, before you hang up and go back to the rest of your weekend, if you or anyone else would like to learn more about hospice and embracing hospice and their services, two things. Their phone number is 732-974-2545. And as Adam mentioned, you can go online at embracinghospicecare.org and learn more about it. And it's really a blessing that we're able to do the show, and I thank you for sharing your weekend with us as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care, Liz.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We have a lot more to cover, but before we do, Lauren is going to share with you some of the other services that Novena Associates offers. So before we take our first commercial break, just a reminder, please have a pen and pad handy because we're going to be giving you more important information. Stay tuned. You're listening to Inside the Law here on 1160 WOBM AM. Thank you.
Is Tommy asleep?
Yes. Thanks for tackling the dishes. I'll dry.
I stopped in to check on Dad after work.
Oh, how is he?
Fine. He's thinking about moving to assisted living. And he brought up the topic of his will.
Well, that's a pretty gloomy topic.
Not really. All his life, Dad has been such a planner. You know, dots all of his I's and crosses all of his T's. And he asked if we have wills as well.
Us? But we're still young.
Yes, but think about it. If something, heaven forbid, ever happens to us, what happens to Tommy?
Oh, I never thought about that.
Neither have I, till Dad brought it up.
Well, then perhaps we should get in touch with a lawyer to take care of this matter as soon as possible.
From creating or revising a will to knowing what your legal obligations are when buying or selling a home, understanding taxes or needing help with assisted living, depend on valuable guidance from Novian Associates in Manchester and Seagirt. They've been helping people of all ages easily understand legal concepts that will affect them and their families. Call Novian Associates today at 732-657-0600 or visit online at novilaw.com.
Good morning, and welcome back to another edition of Inside the Law here on 1160 WOBM AM in Ocean County and 1310 AM in Monmouth County and all over the world on the Internet at www.wobmam.com. I'm your host, Bob Novy of Novy & Associates, your elder law firm in Ocean and Monmouth County with offices in Manchester as well as in Seagirt. And we appreciate the opportunity to present this show over the last 19 years and cover a multitude of topics. We always like to hear from you, so if anyone has any questions or comments, please feel free to either call our office during the week at 732-657-0600. You can either ask for me, Bob Novy, Doug Hull, Jason Wyatt, or one of our other paralegals or paraprofessionals. You can also speak with Jake Mason, our director of marketing, because we regularly appear and go out into the community and are invited to discuss various subjects of a legal nature that our community wants to learn more about. And along that area, I know we're going to be speaking at the Atria, which is an assisted living facility in Tinton Falls next week. We're also going to be speaking on ethics issues at the Pines in Whiting on September 17th. We'll also be speaking at the Women's Club at the Horizon in Barnegat. It's a new adult community on estate planning and wills. We also have a seminar at Westlake in Jackson. We have one at the Four Seasons in Matita Conk and Four Seasons in Jackson on plan giving, and a whole host of other subjects throughout the year. So if anyone listening to today's show would like to learn more about these seminars, or you'd like us to appear in your community and present a seminar on a topic of interest that you'd like to learn more about, you can call us at 732-657-0600 or visit our website, which is www.novilaw.com, and it lists upcoming events and some of the programs that we are going to be presenting. As a matter of fact, I understand that Embracing Hospice provides in-service education topics as well.
We do.
And just looking at some of the items that you regularly present to care managers and others includes emergency management, disaster planning, ethical issues for end of life, grief and bereavement, holistic treatment, infectious disease, pain management, symptoms of dying and death, symptom management, and much, much more. So again, if you'd like to learn more firsthand about hospice and the various components of it, ways to cope with it, ways to prepare for it, and what services are available, again, please call Embracing at 732-974-2545, and Rick, the owner of Embracing, will be glad to accommodate our listening audience and your community, or send you some brochures learning more about hospice. You know, frankly, when, as Liz mentioned, our first caller, people are reluctant to bring up that word hospice. But it's not, as I understand it, only about literally dying or at the end of life. Can you share with us some of, if I may use these terms tastefully and appropriately, what are some of the pleasurable experiences, Sue, that you may have witnessed firsthand and maybe arranged for hospice patients and their families?
Well, a lot of our patients that we bring on are homebound because of pain or difficulty breathing. The nurse gets in there, gives them the proper medication. We actually had a lady who we did have on a higher level of care because her breathing was so bad. Within a couple days, that resolved, and within a week, she went to Atlantic City with her oxygen and her caregiver, and it was something she really wanted to do. And then we have people.
How did she make out? Did she win?
She won, and I think she went back a second time, too.
Good
I'm not
for her.
Keeping track on what she's doing
Good
anymore.
For her. I hope she won a lot because now she has to rewrite her will. But in any event.
And then we've had our priest marry couples that are, you know, redo their vows and actually marry a couple, too, before the husband died.
Those are great success stories.
Yes.
Again, our phone number is 732-505-1160. Laura and I understand we have another caller on the line. Stacy, thank you for calling Inside the Law. How can we help you?
Hi, Hi, I had a quick question. There's so many different companies out there that provide hospice. What makes Embracing Hospice different from the others?
That's a very good question. Adam?
It's a good point. And I like to say that we're a local, family-owned and operated company, and how that matters is that if you call our main number, that 6 times out of 10, our owner's going to be the one to answer it. So he's very involved, and, you know, with that, I think that's important to have the highest level of care. Additionally, we have a one-hour response time. So if one of our partners calls us up, that we can actually reach out to the family within that 1 hour. And usually that's really important.
And isn't it fair to say, Adam, that, and Susan knows this firsthand because she actually goes out in the community and does it, most of your hospice volunteers and aides and nurses are covering the communities where they themselves live. So
correct.
There's more exposure and more accountability.
Right. We like to, like I said, we are in central New Jersey, and even though our offices are in Wall, which is southern Monmouth, our caregivers live all over. Matter of fact, many of them live right here in Toms River. So we can have that rapid response, which is very important. And we can also do the same-day admission, so care could start immediately. Now, I think a couple of other points that I want to make where I think we differentiate ourselves is that unlimited bereavement time. Now, the Medicare regulates that we have to have 13 months of bereavement following the passing of one of our patients.
Follow-up,
right. However, we have unlimited bereavement because we believe in Father John, who runs our service, is that he wants to follow them as long as they need it.
So they're not automatically and literally cut off after that 13-month period. While Medicare may only require the 13 months, Embracing is available beyond that if the family would like to avail itself of more bereavement than that.
That's right.
Does that also, have you found, help kind of give the family, the survivors of the hospice patient, more of a sense of completion after the fact of coping with the loss?
I think so, because they get used to the Barbara, the social worker, and Father John. They become very close.
Or Chaplain Joe.
Chaplain, or even the nurses.
And isn't it also fair to say that, because I've seen firsthand, that Embracing, as a family-owned company, does some other unique things with pet therapy,
right?
Music therapy.
Right. We do Reiki.
Reiki.
We have a harpist.
Harpist.
I was going to point that out, Bob, too, that I've been working with hospice, and a lot of our facility partners point out that they don't see volunteers that often, you know, except from us, because I feel that even though we're required by the government to do 5% of all of our work with hospice through volunteers, many of the other providers are utilizing them in an administrative purpose, you know, answer phones, filing, things of that nature. And it's our philosophy that if someone's going to join us to volunteer, that they want to volunteer and visit with the patients.
And I would think it personalizes the care more particularly because it provides a different dimension of a volunteer who perhaps has life experiences that they can share with the patient and on a different level than just coming in all due respect as a nurse or an aide. It's somebody who is from the community themselves, and perhaps I got to believe that some of those volunteers are perhaps people who witnessed firsthand hospice care for a loved one that they received that service previously, so they have a heightened sense of sensitivity. Okay. Stacy, did we answer your questions?
Yes, thank you.
So,
I appreciate your time.
Thank you for calling. And again, if you'd like to learn more about Embracing Hospice, please feel free to call their number at 732-974-2545 or visit their website at embracinghospicecare.org. Stacy, thank you for sharing your weekend with us, and I hope you enjoy the rest of it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Lauren, I understand we have a caller on another line. Christy, welcome to Inside the Law. How can we help you?
Yes, hi. My dad's at a local hospital, and they are suggesting that it's time to consider hospice, but they're telling me that I have to use their hospice. Do I have an option to use Embracing or another provider?
Tracy, is it Tracy?
Christy.
No, Christy.
Oh, Christy, I'm sorry. Yes, Christy, I'm going to let Sue or Adam answer that. But quite frankly, as a consumer and as an advocate for my clients, I have gotten the same treatment from other hospitals and other facilities where clients of mine are. And in all due respect, I've seen situations where that facility, whether it's a hospital or nursing home or continuing care community, will literally try to force or push a specific company on the family because that hospice company may be owned by either the facility or by the doctor who's treating that patient, which to me is frankly a conflict of interest. The patient by law is supposed to be given choices. And beyond that, I'm going to let Adam or Susan explain as your rights as a consumer as to choices.
Oh, hi, Christy.
Thank you.
Yes, hi. I hear that all the time, unfortunately, more often than you'd like. I'm sorry to hear about your dad, but you should know that you have the right to choose which provider you go with. You should never feel pressured to go with any one particular agency. Saying that, I would recommend that you approach it like you would any other major life decision and do some research, interview at least 2 to 3 companies and interview them. Go with the agency that you fit best with, that you feel the most comfortable with.
And what are some of the things that Christy should look for in a hospice provider?
Well, it's all individualized, I guess. Really, it's hospice is a service, and we provide a similar service with a lot of the other companies you're doing, but it's really all about the people and the comfort level that you have with them. One of the standouts that I've always talked about with Embracing is that we have a very close-knit team. We communicate together very well. Again, a lot of us have been here for a long time. Barbara, our social worker, has been with the company for 10-plus years. Sue has been, she said, for 10 years. Father John has been with since inception, I think, about, like saying, 15 years. So we work really well together. And just like any other service, the outcome of that service is how well the people work together and work for you.
So, Christy, the answer to your question, obviously, is you do have choices. And any hospital where your dad is, while they recommend hospice care, as was mentioned earlier, the hospice care may be available and provided at the hospital setting, or if your dad is being discharged to home, while that hospital may recommend or give you the name of a specific hospice company, it might be one owned by them or it might be one that a doctor has an interest in or owns. While that's one resource, you don't have to accept that as the gospel. You have other options, and frankly, the hospital has an obligation to provide you with the choice of, in my opinion, at least 3. And quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, you do have rights. And I've heard of situations such as this before. And if you think that your rights are being violated, you have recourses by calling the New Jersey Department of Health. And if you've had similar experiences or more egregious concerns and complaints, please feel free to call us during the week at 732-657-0600 if you need more guidance, because we have, among other things, legally, a patient's bill of rights. And as I understand it, hospice patients have a bill of rights as well, don't they? There's a hospice patient's bill of rights? I've seen that in some of your literature.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when we sit down with our patient or the power of attorney, the family member, one of the things we go through is it's 27 different pages of information, of course, explaining the hospice benefit and you know what they're entitled to. But at the end, there's 3 pages worth of individual rights.
Okay.
And, you know, I could go into detail, but I don't want to bore the audience, but right to fair treatment, right to know what care they're getting, things of that nature.
Right to have your privacy, of course, respected.
Mm-hmm.
Right to have your information treated and discreetly and confidentially. I imagine also, if I may, that the hospice patient or their representative, their advocate, can express to you, the hospice providers, as to who they're willing to have visit them in their home setting, if they're at home, for example, who they perhaps may not want to have any contact with, and also to use you as their advocates and extension of services if there's things that they need to get done or completed, which I guess sometimes brings in the use of your volunteers?
Yes, our volunteers can go shopping. They can sit with the patient. They can do just about anything. They can pick up the medications from the pharmacy. They're there to help you and the patient. And just so you know, if you do choose a hospice that they want you to choose, you have a right to transfer to another one if it doesn't work out.
You can.
Yes, you don't have to stick with the hospice.
If there's an issue with difference of opinion or personalities, or frankly the family member is not comfortable with that particular provider, you as a consumer
Absolutely.
Have a right to discontinue and change. Folks, again, our phone lines are open. Our number here at the studio is 732-505-1160. Is there generally a time frame as far as when a person is not curative, their illness is not able to be cured, and they're not, frankly, getting any better, and I don't know if this is the right terminology, they're at the end stages of life due to an advanced illness, whatever that illness might be, where hospice would be appropriate? And if so, is there a length of time that hospice usually is available for as allowed by Medicare or Medicaid?
Well, it's going to start out with the verbiage is 6 months or less to live if the disease follows its natural course. When you come on, you have a 90-day certification period, and then you go into a second 90-day, and then on the first 60-day, you're going to have a nurse practitioner come out, make sure you're still hospice appropriate. And then they'll determine by your weight, what's going on with the disease, whether you still can remain on hospice. Sometimes people are discharged from hospice because they're just not meeting the criteria for that disease.
And sometimes they get better.
Sometimes they do. And just because they're better for maybe a week, you don't just take them off. You just wait it out and see what happens. Because you do have good days and you're going to have bad days.
I remember hearing somewhere, Adam, I think you might know some more information about this from research that's been done, that when a person goes on a hospice, especially if they go on early enough, the quality of care and their remaining days sometimes actually improves?
That's correct. There was a 2007 study done in the Journal of Pain and Symptom Management, and they followed patients with a non-small cell lung cancer. And what they found was that patients on a hospice program actually live 29 days longer.
And when you're talking about end-stage's life, 29 days could be an eternity for someone.
That's true. Absolutely. And it dispelled the myth and the inaccurate perception that hospice means giving up.
And it's not.
Correct.
How about dealing with your remaining days, however long or short they may be, in a less painful setting with more enjoyment, a better quality of life, more help at home if the hospice patient is at home, and allowing them to have a sense of completion for them as well as their family members? And if so, what are some of the ways that any client, any listener here on Inside the Law can achieve that sense of completion? What kind of suggestions might you make based on your years collectively in dealing with clients in the health field, ways that they can document their wishes and, in my opinion, among others, leaving a lasting and a meaningful legacy?
Well, I think when you have from the nurse's aide to the nurse to the social worker to the chaplain in your house all the time, you become close to these people, and they will tell you what their wishes are. I mean, who has a nurse come visit every week? And the quality of life gets better. They feel better for a time period, and you'll know what their wishes are, and social worker especially is very, very involved with knowing what they want. Even if it's just a visit from a pet, a family member that can't get here, we try to provide for that.
One thing I should point out,
yes,
too, is that the social worker, the chaplain, they're not just for the patient, but they also reach out to the family members that are involved as well and try to initiate those conversations. And they're there for the grieving and any kind of counseling that's needed.
Have you ever had folks that are on hospice have to go back to the hospital, and are they permitted to do so? And if so, under what circumstances?
Well, we always, when we bring the patient on, we tell them we're the first call. So you call the hospice any time of day. We'll send a nurse out. If it's something we can't resolve, a broken hip, you got to go to the hospital. You don't want to lay there with a fracture. We do try not to let them go if they're for lung cancer, they're having a hard time breathing. We try to resolve everything in the home.
And frankly, ladies and gentlemen, that's one of the examples that I was thinking of and why I will recommend to clients, among other legal issues to deal with and address in a timely fashion before the episodes like we're describing today occur, of the importance of memorializing and writing down your wishes, such as in an advance directive of a living will, because in a healthcare setting, whether or not a healthcare setting is appropriate, does the person want to be hospitalized? Do they want to be resuscitated? Do they need to have any medical intervention? Do they want that? Along with other things such as even fluid and nutrition.
Right.
And the family members I've had this conversation with, frankly, feel guilty and uncertain as to what to do, whether or not if the client, their family, has not executed a living will. The family who stands in their shoes as the decision maker doesn't know what to do. Should I authorize the operation? Should I agree to have mom put on oxygen? Should I agree to have her resuscitated if she's in for whatever, in the hospital for any condition, any surgery, and something goes wrong, not expected, but it occurs, do I want my parent to be resuscitated? And those are very, very difficult decisions for someone to have to make. But if the client, the person listening to today's show on Inside the Law, frankly accepts that responsibility and writes it down in a timely fashion, and it's reflected in a living will, you're taking that burden and those decisions off of the family, and you're accepting the consequences yourself, so there shouldn't be any guilt, there shouldn't be any arguments or misunderstandings subsequently, because you, the person, has the right to choose what you want done or not done. This is your right and this is your body. And you can't be, I can't say that strongly enough. Susan?
I agree. And it is best if all these decisions are done before the patient is dying. And does the patient want to go to the hospital? We'll never tell them, no, they can't go. We're going to try to stop it. Do they want IV fluids? It's all about educating the family and the patient so things don't get crazy at the end.
And exactly. At our first meeting, these topics are always breached.
Have you had any other experiences in your years as a hospice nurse, Sue, where you were able to bring people together, the hospice patient and either a family member or friend that they hadn't seen and hadn't been in touch with for years, and you were able to make that union again?
We did through our foundation, bring a family member who couldn't afford the fly up from Texas to here to see their family member before they died.
And we talked briefly about Medicaid, and as our listeners know, because we've spoken about Medicaid many times on this show, if a person is on Medicaid and they haven't prearranged their funeral, quite frankly, and haven't prepaid their funeral, the availability of resources for Medicaid is extremely limited and extremely low. So, again, I always advocate and recommend, as clients are doing their estate planning and protecting their assets and perhaps looking at a Medicaid plan and the funding of Medicaid, one of the things I'll always recommend people do is to write down and communicate to their loved ones what their last wishes are as far as a funeral. Discuss their choices. Discuss the options of burial, cremation, or however they want their remains to be handled. But also to prearrange and pre-fund those costs, because you don't want the financial burden to be left to your loved ones. And if that's the case, but the loved ones can't finance it, Medicaid will not pay the full price of what a person may want to have occur as far as at death, to die with dignity and have their arrangements done in a dignified fashion, because the family just frankly may not be able to afford and may not have the resources. So we can't overemphasize today enough the importance of documenting your wishes. I guess you regularly also deal with many social workers and discharge planners and doctors on various levels and in various environments.
We do.
Hospitals, nursing homes, assisted livings, mm-hmm. and other.
Yes.
And I guess you have your own doctors. If there's a doctor that's not available for whatever reason, you have other doctors that can come in and help the family with these issues from an ethical and medical point of view?
Our medical director is Dr. McAuliffe. If for some reason the physician doesn't want to follow the patient, it automatically goes to Dr. McAuliffe.
And speaking of following the patient, I understand that even during Hurricane Sandy, some of your hospice patients, hospice recipients who had to evacuate their homes due to flooding and hurricane conditions, had to relocate to other facilities. Your hospice team actually was able to follow those patients wherever they went elsewhere in New Jersey?
Yes, we actually had a patient in Lavalette, and he was right by the water, and we knew it wasn't going to be good, and the social worker had him transported up north to the son's house.
We can actually follow our patients wherever they go. As a matter of fact, let's say you have some couples who snowbird and go to Florida for the wintertime, and they still can do that, and we can just contract with a provider there so we can maintain, you know, the services.
So looking at the volunteer request form that Embracing will fill out with a family member for someone that's receiving hospice care, the services that your volunteers may provide may include, if desired, companionship, shopping, reading, participating in other hobbies, preparing meals, running errands, light housekeeping, pet therapy, Reiki, music.
Sure.
It's tremendous.
That's not an exhaustive list either. We try to match specific talents to specific patients that are interested in that. As I pointed out earlier, I think we pay tribute to the volunteer program as it's meant to be. And our volunteer director, Ralph Adonisio, does a wonderful job.
Also, one last thought that comes to me. People ask me this all the time. If I make a will, if I prepare a will, where should I keep it? Where should it be located? If someone has a living will, where are the places that copies of that living will should be kept, Susan?
We actually have a copy if the family will give it in our chart. And then whoever is in charge of the household, make sure everything is, you know, where we can find it if at the end. But we have a copy on the chart at all times.
And I would also think, obviously, that the responsible party, the healthcare proxy, the agent or the person that's going to advocate and is named in that living will, of course, should have a copy. We at Novena Associates, when we prepare them, we, of course, always keep a copy on hand. I will recommend to my client that they give a copy to their physician or physicians. And, of course, every time a patient goes to a hospital, the hospital will ask them if they have a living will on file. And I always recommend this, and sometimes it's done, sometimes it's not. But as we advance in technology and services, I'm always advocating that our hospitals scan in and keep on their database, in their database, copies of documents such as the living will, the medical power of attorney, and other forms, because it can shorten the length of stay and help ensure that the client's dignity and wishes are carried out and respected. Any last thoughts as we wrap up with about a minute left on today's show on Inside the Law? Susan, Adam?
No, I just thank you for your time and appreciate the opportunity. Glad to talk with all the listeners.
Well, I appreciate your time as well. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for tuning in. The questions today, as always, were right on point. I want to thank Christy and Stacy and Liz for tuning in. And ladies and gentlemen, for listening to 1160 WOLBM AM in Ocean County and 1310 AM in Monmouth County and all over the world on WOBMAM.com. And again, please consider us, Novian Associates, as your elder law firm and resource. And for more information about us, our services, visit our website at www.novilaw.com or call our office for more information at 732-657-0600. Enjoy the weekend. God bless. And we'll be back with another edition Inside the Law 2 weeks from today. Thank you so much, and be well, folks. Bye-bye.